The following podcast is intended for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised. Hey guys, welcome back to part three of our three-part series on the Zodiac. You may have thought this day wasn't going to come, but we're here.
We're here. Thank goodness we have finally made it to the end of our three-part series on the Zodiac, and I don't mean it the way it sounds. I'm just glad, because you guys know that I went way off the damn deep end on this one, and everybody's just nodding and not saying anything, so indeed. I know that you agree. So I'm never going to do that again, but I did it this time, and I'm glad that we've gotten to the end of it, but I'm anxious to do this part, and next week, something crazy is going to happen. But we can't tell you about that yet. Or Kelly will throw me out of the building.
Yep, I will.
Well, I'm Katie Givens. I'm not a lawyer.
My name is Scott Wright. I'm a mediocre journalist.
I'm Kelly Turner. I'm not a lawyer.
Yep, that is correct.
I'm not a doctor.
Or a lawyer.
And I'm not drinking either.
And you're not a mediocre journalist. Really, you're probably better at this than I am.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I don't know. Have you ever read anything I've written?
I have.
It is substandard.
Do you know that I have your book?
What?
Your book is on my coffee table as part of my decor.
Have you ever cracked the spine on that book?
I have.
Mm-hmm.
I have.
Whatever. I don't believe you.
I'm telling you the truth.
Okay.
But I'm not.
Well, then thank you.
I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a doctor, so I don't know if you should believe me.
But she swears she can read.
The question is, what am I? What am I doing here today?
I don't think any of us know what we're doing here today.
I do. I do know that. That was a rhetorical question. I'm here because we're round and out this trilogy. I'm excited.
It's warm in here already. This is going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait.
I cannot wait. And I can't believe that we are talking about part three in our Zodiac series. Before we get started with our finale, we're going to briefly go over the facts about the case that we covered in parts one and two, because we want to make sure that we discuss that. If you've not listened to part one and two, you need to go back.
Stop now.
Yeah. Don't just wait on this recap. Get the whole experience.
Don't half-ass it.
No, whole ass it.
Thank you.
Whole ass it.
Yes.
And look, you need to get the Henry experience. You need to hear Henry's voice, and he does such a great job, and you will get to hear that eventually in this episode as well. But one last shout out to Henry for being such a wonderful voiceover actor.
Yeah, what a great creepy voice Henry has. I don't say it that way to him to his face, but that's what we're all thinking.
So let's get into a few things that we discussed based on our, quote, expertise.
Speaking of not a lawyer, not a doctor, and a mediocre journalist.
Well, there are people out there who spent years talking about this case, reading about it, investigating leads and clues and hints and conspiracies about the Zodiac Killer, about who he was and about who he was not. That is not us.
Nope.
I mean...
not even close.
Mm-hmm. I titled this Zodiac 101 for a reason. We're just scraping the bottom of the barrel, giving you the basics here. We hope that our listeners will judge that we accomplished that feat of acquiring a basic understanding of the case and passing it along when the series finally concludes today.
And I think we will learn an awful lot about this case along the path of this three-part series, including that every rabbit hole in this case only leads to a dozen more rabbit holes. There's never been a truer statement.
Yeah.
I mean, this case will consume you.
People have done this for years. Mm-hmm. And I can see how that happens, because I have gone on enough websites and listened to enough podcasts about the Zodiac Killer to know that, good grief, you can spend your entire adult life trying to get to the bottom of this, and there is no bottom.
No. We remain amateurs, of course, when it comes to the Zodiac Killer, and we own that. We admit that. If you were, too, when this started, then maybe you learned along with us, and so we hope that we've been able to bring you into the world of the Zodiac. I would say we dipped our toe in based on, you know, some people, it's their life work, but we were just going to dip our toe in, and we hope that you found us competent enough to complete an introductory level course about the Zodiac.
Yeah, fingers crossed on that one. So anyway, back in Zodiac 101, part one, We set the table for the story. We talked about what was going on in 1968, which is when this case began. We talked about the turmoil in the country and really all around the world. I mean, Vietnam is raging in Asia. Martin Luther King Jr. and Bobby Kennedy both died by assassin's bullets right here at home. There was racial unrest around the country. College students across the nation were protesting the war. NASA's Apollo program was aiming for the moon. A lot going on. Mm-hmm.
And then in Northern California in December 1968, the Zodiac Killer struck for the first time. Although you can probably start an argument at a gathering of Zodiac experts with that sentence.
For itself, sure.
We're not even going to touch the Cherry Joe Bates case from Riverside, California, 1966. But there's a place to begin your search if you like rabbit holes, like we mentioned.
Plenty to go around.
Kelly started off part one by telling us about the .22 caliber shooting deaths of teenagers Betty Lou Jenkins and David Faraday. At where they parked off the side of the road at Lake Herman Road in Solano County, California on December 20th, 1968.
And then Scott told us about when the Zodiac struck again 6 months later on July 4th, 1969, only 5 miles away at another Lover's Lane area, the Blue Rock Springs Park in Vallejo, California, and that's in the same county. 22-year-old Darlene Farron was shot to death, and 19-year-old Mike Majot was critically injured by a total of 10 shots from a 9mm pistol.
And then there was a telephone call to the Vallejo Police Department. That phone started ringing, and everything changed in the Bay Area for a long time afterwards. That first call, just a few minutes after Darlene and Mike were attacked, featured a man's voice delivering a confession about both the Blue Rock Springs Park crime and the Lake Herman Road shooting the previous December. And that call ended with a very ominous sign-off. And once again, our good friend Henry Johnson was kind enough to do the voiceover work for us. You have heard it throughout this three-part series about the Zodiac Killer. Here is a portion of that particular call we're talking about, including that eerie sign-off, one last time.
I want to report a double murder. If you will go 1 mile east on Columbus Parkway to the public park, you will find the kids in a brown car. They were shot with a 9mm Luger. I also killed those kids last year. Goodbye.
So that was Zodiac 101, part one. Last week in part two, we told you all about the other two attacks that can be directly attributed to the Zodiac Killer. The Lake Berryessa attack on September 27th, 1969, that left 22-year-old Cecilia Shepherd dead, and the execution-style shooting of a cab driver named Paul Stein, age 29, in downtown San Francisco on October 11th, 1969.
And that gets us here to part three. We've been promising you we would try and explain some of these cryptograms the Zodiac Killer sent to the newspapers in the San Francisco Bay Area during this time. Now, Katie's going to tell us about two of the most famous of those Zodiac cryptograms, the Z408 and the Z340, named for the number of characters in each.
So, Katie, it only took a few days to figure out the first of those two cryptograms, right? And then over 50 years to solve the second one, yes?
Yes. So, a school teacher and his wife, Don and Betty Harden, solved the Zodiac's very first cryptogram, the Z408, within a few days of its arrival at three Bay Area newspapers in late July of 1969. Betty started with the letter L and quickly solved the Z408. So that's the clue we gave listeners last week. And Connie Geimer was the first to send in a correct solution to our email address. Connie, congratulations. And we have your t-shirt ready and waiting for
you. Yes, congratulations.
Yeah, she has to come to a live show to pick that up. So Wednesday, March the 30th.
Yeah, we have to bribe people.
Yeah, we need photos and the whole thing. So show up.
On the other hand, it was December 2020 before the Z340 was solved by a trio of amateur internet sleuths. You got to love those internet sleuths.
They got figured out. It took them 50 years, but they got it. Got
to love them. The key phrase in that solution was perhaps this one. That wasn't me on the TV show. It was mailed on November the 8th, 1969, 2 weeks after someone claiming to be the Zodiac Killer called into a TV morning show in San Francisco. And it turns out this caller was a mental patient who, for some reason, had access to a telephone.
Yeah, we're not even going to dig into that. But guys, I think that the solution about the 340 tells us that the Zodiac Killer, he sort of outsmarted himself. Because even though he wanted to make the 340 more difficult than the 408, he still wanted people to know what that message contained, because he was telling people, basically, I'm not the guy who called into that TV show. And I'm guessing 51 years later, that information is no longer pertinent.
And nobody cares at that
Nobody cares at that point. But he made the 340 so hard that it took 51 years, all just to tell us that he did not call into the AM San Francisco morning show in October of 1969 to speak to famous attorney to the stars, Melvin Belli. And since Katie is our resident legal expert, and that was air quotes that you can't see on your podcast, who better to tell us about Melvin Belli than Katie?
Melvin Belli really is an interesting character. He was born July 29th, 1907. He passed away July 9th, 1996. He was a prominent United States lawyer, author, and actor, known as the King of Torts. He had many celebrity clients during his legal career. He won over like $600 million in damages for those clients. And that is even a lot more money now. I mean,
yeah. And he was raking in what, about 30% of that? So he probably had a really nice house somewhere.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh,
probably multiple, but yes.
Yeah.
He was also the attorney for Jack Ruby, who shot Lee Harvey Oswald for the assassination of President JFK. That's probably what one of the things he's most famous for. Most famous for besides what we're about to talk about.
Besides what we're about to talk about. Yeah.
In 1969, a man called San Francisco police identified himself as the serial killer known only as the Zodiac, like we just spoke about, and agreed to call talk show host Jim Dunbar on Dunbar's morning television talk show, AM San Francisco, if either Belli or attorney F. Lee Bailey was present on the air. The police contacted both of them to arrange this in hopes of capturing the individual. And as promised, the suspect called, spoke a few words, then hung up, repeating this activity 54 times over the next 2 hours. Belli received a letter from the Zodiac the same year. Like Scott mentioned earlier, 2 months earlier when the Oakland Police Department took the call from somebody claiming to be the Zodiac, requested to speak to either Belli or Francis Lee Bailey. Remember, two other people have spoken to the Zodiac killer. Like, they've heard his
voice. Yeah, good point. Very good point.
And so, through all of this, they were able to determine that that voice was not the same voice that...
Yeah, because the Vallejo dispatcher that very first night, or Solano County, whoever it was, and then Brian Hartnell,
right,
who was at Lake Berryessa, they both heard his voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they were saying, this is not the voice.
When they heard that recording, they're like, this isn't the guy.
This isn't the guy. But, you know, Belli's got to be loving this. This is free publicity.
Yeah.
F. Lee Bailey, too. But, I mean, Belli's the one who ends up being on the show, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So... this is just free publicity. He doesn't have to use all the money he's won to advertise himself. And
there's a great sequence in the 2007 film, The Zodiac, where they try to recreate as realistically as possible the way that that all happened that morning. You'll have to see that for yourself because I'm not going to mention it when I talk about that film later. But David Fincher tried to be as accurate as he possibly could about the facts about everything to do with The Zodiac. And I feel like he got that one right. So make sure and watch the film.
It's a really good film.
Yeah.
And Brian Cox, who is currently on the HBO show Succession, plays Belli in that movie.
And he's one of my favorite actors.
So Brian Cox in Succession is the main guy.
He's the elder. Yeah. He's the matriarch. Patriarch of the family.
He is fantastic in both of these. I thought that's who you were talking about.
He's really good in Super Troopers too. If you want to see how broad Brian Cox is, he is fantastic as the police chief in Super Troopers.
He is also fantastic in The Campaign.
I forgot he was in that. Now I have to go home and watch The Campaign tonight.
That is a hugely underrated movie.
Damn it, Kelly.
Hilarious.
I already had something picked out to watch when I got home tonight, and now I have to watch that instead. But that's okay. I'm not complaining.
All right.
So on December 20th, 1969, the first anniversary of the Lake Herman Road murders, the Zodiac Killer mailed a letter to the home address of Belli in San Francisco, asking for his help and claiming he was, quote unquote, afraid of losing control again and taking his ninth or possibly 10th victim. He also included another piece of Paul Stein's shirt. Paul Stein, remember, was that cab driver who he shot and cut pieces of his shirt and sent in to verify his authenticity. The letter read, "Dear Melvin, this is the Zodiac speaking. I wish you a happy Christmas. The one thing I ask of you is this. Please help me. I cannot reach out for help because of this thing in me won't let me. I am finding it extremely difficult to hold it in check. I'm afraid I will lose control again and take my ninth and possibly 10th victim. Please help me. I'm drowning. At the moment, the children are safe from the bomb because it is so massive to dig in and the trigger mech requires much work to get it adjusted just right. But if I hold back too long from No 9, I will lose all control of myself and set the bomb up. Please help me. I cannot remain in control for much longer.
And that's another reference to the earlier threat that the Zodiac made to damage or to
pick off children from a school bus.
As they ran from the school, put a bomb on a bus. Yeah. And yeah. Mm-hmm. This letter to me just sounds like pure BS.
And the copy I got or that I found, it's got misspellings and things in it. So I don't know if that is true to how it was actually
written. And they do a great job of this again in the Zodiac, and I don't touch on it, so I'm glad you brought it up. But there was a man named Sherwood Morrill who was he worked for the California Department of Justice, and it was his job to match up all of these different letters that they were getting and determine whether or not the person who had written them was indeed the Zodiac. And I saw this brief interview with Morrill, and he said it's pretty obvious that the Zodiac is a smart individual. He's very intelligent. His grammar is good. His punctuation is good. Anytime he spells something wrong, he's trying to fool us into thinking that he is not as smart as he is.
Yes, and he's absolutely, in my opinion, not about to lose control and do all of these things. He just loves this game of messing with people.
Exactly.
Yeah, it does seem methodical. Like, it's like Christmas has two S's and
victim
spelled with an O and not an I.
Like, right.
And just the phrase Happy Christmas is not relevant to the United States.
Yeah, we weren't woke yet.
That is that's a very British saying. Happy Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Right. Instead of Merry,
Instead of Merry Christmas. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have looked at that and thought maybe he, you know, might be British or he had, you know, some British family or something, but nothing has ever been able to be proven. About or maybe, in regards to that.
Or maybe watched Monty Python's Flying Circus. Was that a thing yet? I don't remember. The early 70s before that. Maybe we should cut that.
He could have just been, again, trying to throw everybody off.
I think that's
and use the, some phrasing that was a little bit different. But I know that people have focused in on that, the happy Christmas
part. I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly enough, when this letter was delivered, like I said, in December of 1969, Belli had traveled to Munich for a conference. So his housekeeper actually forwarded the letter to his office because, like I said, this was taken to his home address,
right?
Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure was not public knowledge at the time. I mean, you know,
and that's got to be ridiculously creepy.
Yeah, because you can find somebody's office address easily, but getting their home address is weird. And it remained at his office until after the Christmas break when he returned back to work. When employees finally returned, they found the letter and its contents and handed it immediately over to authorities where it was subsequently analyzed and they authenticated it and found it to be a genuine Zodiac correspondence.
Probably that Sherwood Morrill character. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was the expert on whether or not that handwriting was the Zodiac or not at the time.
And of course they matched the piece of Paul Stein's shirt. Yeah. That's about it on Belli's involvement. I mean, he's, like I said, he's pretty interested in himself. If you want to look him up, he has a long legal career.
I've got that book on the way. I'm going to read it and then I will pass it along to you.
Yeah, does some
his
really
autobiography
random things
from the 70s.
Yep. His grandmother was the first female pharmacist in the state of California. That was just interesting tidbit.
Right. Hey, something interesting to know.
Yeah.
Good for her.
So there's one example of the rabbit hole filled with rabbit holes we are talking about when it comes to the Zodiac Killer. And on to the next, Kelly has some information about what goes on, or perhaps doesn't, in the heads of people who commit crimes like those committed by the Zodiac. And she's going to go through a few of the top suspects that have developed at various points over the past 50 years, some while the crimes were still going on, and some who came along years later.
All right, so we're going to talk about the psychological profile of the Zodiac, and this is listed in the book. I know Scott has put it on our reference page, or Katie has put it on a reference page.
Katie
Scott's
did.
Talked about it on our episodes, but it's the title of the book is Zodiac, the shocking true story of the hunt for the nation's most elusive serial killer by Robert Graysmith. He was on staff for the San Francisco Chronicle when all of this was going on. Mm-hmm. So he has a firsthand account of the chaos that this caused. when the Zodiac was active. But there's a psychological profile of the Zodiac, and I'm not going to read the entire thing. It's pretty long.
All right.
But I wanted to just focus on
I'm curious. I don't know. I didn't get that far into the book, so.
Okay. Well, you know, we've talked about profiles in previous episodes
yeah.
and talked about how eerily they're correct.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are really good at what they do. But I just want to pull out a few here of the psychological profile of the Zodiac. So paranoid delusions of grandeur. Probably.
Well, now, wait a minute.
Most definitely.
I have those.
Another one is psychotic. This profile also says a sexual sadist. You will find that the Zodiac probably tortured small animals as a child, had a domineering mother, weak or absent father, strong fantasy life, confusion between violence and love. And that is pretty consistent with some of the other more known serial killers. These guys did a lot of interviews with Edmund Kemper, some of these more famous serial killers who were caught and incarcerated.
Right.
And they did a lot of these interviews with them. And so that's where they get this.
And there was this common theme.
Yes.
In many cases.
Yes.
Through the years.
Mm-hmm. And this is one of them. So those first three that I talked to you are very common among serial killers, especially the torture of small animals, delusions of grandeur, possibly domineering mother. You know, it's always the mother's fault.
Ugh.
Oh, yeah.
Very calm in a crisis is one thing that's a little bit unique.
You would have to be.
Particular person.
If you do what these people do, you're in the middle of a crisis mm-hmm. for someone.
Oh, gosh.
When it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You got to stay calm.
And to do these things in broad daylight
yeah.
like this. Plans carefully. That's an understatement.
Yeah.
May rehearse the crimes. Look for similar attacks in areas the weeks prior. Here's another understatement. Enjoys taunting the police.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Secretive and guarded in his dealings with the world. And a lot of times people who end up being serial killers are diagnosed as antisocial personality disorder. But remember, I feel like we've talked about this before. That doesn't mean that they're not good in a social setting.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that they can't be quite charming.
Live of the party.
Mm-hmm.
The guy with the umbrella shade on his head.
Mm-hmm. But
it's a kind of a chameleon.
Yes. And this person, though, they're going to be secretive and guarded in certain things. So he's going to go to a certain point where he's in dealing with other people. But then after that, no one's going to be able to crack the egg or get past the barriers
mm-hmm.
because of the secrets that he holds. He gets very angry when the police tell lies about him. The Zodiac is reasonably truthful in what he writes. I would...
Reasonably
truthful, definitely.
Because he got to the point where a lot of the police in San Francisco started to think that he was taking credit for things that he had not done.
Just, and that letter to the lawyer was just, like I said, that's just total BS,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Agreed.
I mean, that's just rambling on. There's no meat to any of that.
Well, I think some of it was, you know, he'd been out of the news for a little while. I mean, don't forget he liked
being in the news.
Yeah, don't forget that the Manson murders happened in August of 69. So by the end of the year, he's off the front page. Maybe he just needs to reach out to Belli
mm-hmm.
and get himself back on the front page again.
Zodiac is an imitative person, not inventive. Everything he has done, he has seen or he's found it written somewhere. And if you dive very deep into this case and some of the letters, some of the symbols that he wrote, people have been able to tie that back to certain other victims. I won't step on Scott's
No,
toes.
You keep talking, but I found one of those examples that you're talking about, and I will bring it up later when we talk about the entertainment aspect.
So he's basically a gigantic poser.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times these FBI agents and police will be onto this and they'll use that because that's definitely a sore subject. And they'll kind of agitate that or try to agitate that publicly
to cause him maybe to make a mistake, mm-hmm. give up too much information about something, about yes. himself.
I mean, look at BTK. BTK would probably never have been caught had he not decided to pull a Zodiac and write some letters. And I'm so glad that he did. I think he needs to just rot away. And that's the only time you'll hear me mention that on this podcast ever.
All right.
Everybody has that one case that they're like, I'll never do.
We're not doing the BTK kill.
You
I'm fine with
can,
that.
You guys can, and I'll sit
no,
and
no, 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 no. Hey, if you say no, because it's pretty, that one's pretty gruesome.
He's a disgusting monster that deserves to rot. I'm
Deal.
Just saying.
No, I'm with you on that.
All right, moving on. So he makes sure that the woman always dies. And so that's one of the reasons that they were saying that he probably had an overbearing mother, you know, some sort of dominating female presence in his life that he did not like.
It is strange that the only survivors are men. Like, he could have made sure that they were dead too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like he got distracted.
He shot the women multiple times. Yeah. The one lady was 5 times?
Yeah, at Lake Herman Road, mm-hmm. Betty Lou was, am I getting this right? She was 5 times as she ran away,
mm-hmm.
as if to imply perhaps that he said, hey, run.
And at Lake Berryessa, he stabbed her more times than he stabbed.
Yeah, yep. Brian was stabbed 6 times and Cecilia was stabbed 10 times.
Mm-hmm. Just that's very personal. Mm-hmm. And that's to stab somebody, think about stabbing somebody 10 times, to fling that knife and pull it out again and again.
A 12 inch long blade.
That is personal. You got to be right very close to someone to do that.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the reasons that they're saying that about him having an overbearing mother. He definitely is organized. He plans ahead at Lake Berryessa. He cut up clothesline and had that there. The Zodiac kills at close range because he wants his victims to see him. Also, I would also say he wants to watch the life leave their body.
I think it's more that than for him to be seen, because, you know, you think of Lake Berryessa, and that's when he had on the big the hood with just the eye holes cut out and clip on sunglasses, and then the Zodiac symbol on his chest. I mean, he was in costume.
He was, but he wanted to look them in the eye.
Yes, he wanted to see them.
He wanted them to see him and wanted to see that fear.
Yeah.
The fear and watch that leave their eyes. That's very, very, they get off on that. I can't think of a better way. I know that's kind of gross to say, but they do. I mean, it's
part of the fulfillment of their fantasy.
Yes. Now, interestingly enough, they're going to say that he's affected by the moon and the tides. So I guess that has to do with when the killings happened.
Yeah. And that's another rabbit hole you can jump down, because there are people who think that, and maybe they're right. I haven't gotten too far down this rabbit hole, but they were all on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if
they
the moon was
water,
full. There was all a thing about there was a water element, Lake Berryessa, Lake Herman Road, Washington and Cherry Streets. There's a joke in the Zodiac film. But anyway, yeah, it's something's going on that we never got to the bottom of on this one.
Yes. Often he chose his victims with specific occupations. All the victims, even Stein, were students.
That never occurred to me before. There's another rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm. Another one. Ugh. They say he will repeat his crimes. The pleasure from taunting the police may, in the end, become the real motive for the crime. So they're willing to say,
okay,
this whole game may be even more fun, and so he's going to keep doing it because the game continues.
And that's what you don't know. You don't know, like you just said, they were all students. That may have been his primary motivation, or it may have been a strange, quirky coincidence, because he really, like you just now said, wanted to taunt the police instead, and maybe it was all just an accident.
Mm-hmm. Will have a fascination with police work and may have actually applied for a job on the police force.
Interesting.
Skillful and charming liars. He may even move to a state that has the death penalty, which they are saying that he may unconsciously desire. I don't know. That's a controversial
statement. California did at the time. I think it was either 72 or 73 before the state Supreme Court ended the death penalty for a period of time in California.
Mm-hmm. Fantasy of killing his mother. So there's another with the overbearing female presence. This type of killer will scout out a certain type, even to the point of a prepared questionnaire to select them. So I don't know, maybe engage them a little bit or follow them around to see if they check certain boxes before he strikes.
Mike Mageau always said that he and Darlene were followed all night long, right? Mm-hmm. From the time they left his house when she came and picked him up until the time the crime took place at, that would have been what, Blue Rock Springs Park?
Mm-hmm.
He always felt like that they were being followed and that Darlene was suspicious of the cars behind them. And he never got a straight answer from her, but that fits right into your profile there.
Mm-hmm. And so those are just some of the things here. The last one I'll read is they think of the victim as an object. And that's pretty consistent. You separate yourself from the object that deserves to die. That way you don't get talked out of doing what you've planned to do.
Or feel any remorse or in the middle of the act, you don't go, oh, wait a minute, I'm killing a human being here.
Right. You got to continue justifying the reason behind this. And so they just see the victim as an object. And that also goes in line with that lack of remorse and our consistent symptoms of having antisocial personality disorder.
All right.
That's one of the main ones. Some possible suspects.
Oh, let's do this part. Yeah, let's do it.
Scott may have to help me a little bit with these. As I go through, but I have a website here to reference, zodiackkiller.com.
That's Tom Voigt's website. That's a good one.
Yeah. So there are four suspects listed here. He has more on this website, but I just want to talk about four main ones. And Scott, you're going to help me with the pronunciation of this first guy. What's that last name? Richard? Gajkowski?
Yeah, that sounds right. I took my glasses off so my earphones would fit so I can't see it. But yeah, I think it's Gajkowski.
Okay, so if you see a photo of Richard Gajkowski, he fits the description down to those glasses.
Yeah. I just don't know how uncommon black horn-rimmed glasses were in the late 60s.
They weren't.
But
look at the face shape. Look at the nose and the chin. I mean, it's
eerie.
It's worth a look.
It is eerie.
It's worth a look. Okay, so Gajkowski, I just want to give you just the high points on him. He was born in South Dakota in 1936. He attended nearby Webster High School and then Northern State Teachers College in Aberdeen, South Dakota. And he passed away in 2004. But he was in the area. I wanted to with him being in South Dakota, how does that make him the Zodiac?
Right.
In 1963, he moved from South Dakota to San Francisco, and he lived on Parnassus Avenue, and he worked downtown at the Daily Commercial News, which is a financial newspaper. These are really good trades that line up. I can definitely see, other than the way that he looks,
Well, you figure he's good at punctuation if he works at a newspaper, right?
Exactly. And I like everything about him so far. By December 1964, he was living and working in Martinez. Is it Martinez or Martinez?
I would say Martinez.
Martinez, California. I'm sorry, I'm from Alabama. I mean, I've been to...
hey, you and us three.
I've been to San Diego, but that's the only part of California.
I have been to San Francisco, but I was not yet a fan of the Zodiac 10 years ago. Or I'm not a fan of the Zodiac today, but I wasn't enamored with his case 10 years ago when I went. But I wish that I had been, because I would have loved to do kind of one of those, you know, I would have loved to have seen some. I'd have loved to gone to the corner of Washington and Cherry Street and just stood there and... Mm.
Since you're a fan of the Zodiac, I like his style.
All right, cut all that.
Okay, so Gajkowski is in Martinez, California, which is 45 minutes away from San Francisco. He lives on what was called Escobar Street there. And it was located less than 5 miles directly south of the Zodiac's first murders.
So Lake Herman?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's what it says. First, directly south of the Zodiac's first eventual murders.
Well, that means he was also close to Lake, to Blue Rock Springs Park, because those places are only about 5 miles away, right, from each
other. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In October of 1965, Gajkowski was intentionally arrested for refusing to sign a traffic citation following a routine stop. And so as an investigative reporter for the local newspaper, Gajkowski's goal was to write a story about the conditions within the jail from the perspective of an inmate.
I remember reading that now.
Yeah, so he's trying to go in and do a big story. And following his brief stay in jail, his mugshot was published along with his story. However, by the time Gajkowski became a Zodiac suspect, more than 20 years later, records of his fingerprints were long gone, making a comparison to Zodiac's fingerprints impossible. So he was a later suspect. He wasn't a suspect during
because of proximity and the way that he looked. I guess there must have been other clues that led people to think that he was on that short list, because I know that Tom Voigt does pretty solid research, or at least based on everything I've seen on his website.
And you can visit this website and get this full, all of this information. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, but I didn't want to spend
rabbit
too
holes
much time.
On top of rabbit holes on top of rabbit holes.
Exactly. So let's move on to the next suspect. Based on this website, of course, I'm using these top four here. The next suspect I want to talk about is Arthur Lee Allen. I think, Scott, you might actually have mentioned his name last week in part two. So is there anything you want to say about Arthur Lee Allen before he
features prominently in the Zodiac film from 2007. He was always Robert Graysmith's primary suspect. And Graysmith was the guy who wrote the Zodiac book that Kelly referenced earlier.
Yes.
He's also played by Jake Gyllenhaal in the film. And he's been obsessed with Zodiac for his entire adult life. And he was always, Arthur Lee Allen was always Graysmith's top suspect.
Mm-hmm. He was, and he had strong ties to the Riverside area, which a lot of the investigators were saying they believe that he had ties to that particular area.
Well, that takes us back to Sherry Jo Bates in 66, mm-hmm. because there are a lot of Zodiac aficionados think that that's when the Zodiac, at least then, mm-hmm. was when he started his killing spree.
Right, right. So Allen was 32 years old at the time that Bates was killed, and he lives in Vallejo. So he was definitely there. Yeah.
He was right there in town for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. So according to his brother Ron, Arthur Lee Allen was given a Zodiac watch as a Christmas gift from their mother in 1967. Allen's estimation of when he received the watch was July or August of 1969. The logo for the Zodiac watch is a cross circle symbol, the same that the killer eventually used.
So identical.
He possessed this watch. Yeah. So according to police statements, within days of receiving the watch, Allen is allegedly making all of these claims to his friend, Don Cheney. He would like to kill couples at random. He would taunt the police with letters detailing his crimes. These are the things that he's telling Don he's going to do.
Just out of the blue.
Out of the blue after getting this watch. He would sign the letters with that Zodiac symbol and call himself the Zodiac. He would wear makeup to change his appearance. He would attach a flashlight to the barrel of his gun in order to shoot at night. He would fool women into stopping their cars in rural areas by claiming they had problems with their tires, then loosen their lug nuts and eventually take them captive. So he's making these statements to a guy. Yeah. If you're quote, friend starts making these statements to you, don't be friends with them anymore. Mm-hmm. Just change. Change friends. Scott, anything else on Arthur Lee Allen? I mean, why did they eventually just stop? Could they just not get enough evidence?
Well, there were a couple of different times when they got search warrants to get into to the places where he lived. They found some very incriminating things. They found some bomb making apparatus in one of his trailers that he lived in. I think that was in, I don't want to say Santa Cruz, perhaps, or maybe Santa Rosa. But at some point, they did a DNA test and they did a fingerprint test, and he didn't match either of them. And this was probably back in the mid to late 80s. And I hope I'm not getting this wrong. Tom Voigt's going to send me a nasty email if I got any of that wrong. But he was eventually taken off the list. It wasn't him. But now Robert Graysmith,
well, and
as far as I know, still thinks that's who it was.
I believe the science has come a long way. I mean, we were just getting into DNA and I mean,
well, somebody said, I saw a video a couple of weeks ago. Somebody said, look, there were tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people in 1968 who were white males in their 30s who wore horn rim glasses and had crew cuts and lived in that area at the time and were creepy AF on some level.
Well, I mean,
so it could have been any of them.
I guess there could be an argument that, you know, all white men are creepy to an extent.
Okay, you know what? I did not want to go down that rabbit hole while we were here today, but
I'm just kidding.
I'm in no position to argue as I sit here. But I mean, just for some reason, he ended up off of the primary suspects mm-hmm. list, at least in the eyes of the police department, who had two things to deal with, mm-hmm. physical evidence and eyewitness testimony.
And I'm certainly not going to fault them for that, because they don't need to. They definitely do not need to create a narrative and make somebody fit it. They're trying to
exactly,
and people
get
have
the right person.
And there have been plenty of people through the years who have accused Robert Graysmith of doing that. He settled on this one person
guy
that he was convinced was him, and he tried to make all the pieces of the puzzle fit. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's another conspiracy theory. I don't think anybody would do that on purpose, but you know, when you're walking through the world with blinders on.
Well, and we've seen cases before where the science messed up, or people were just trying to fit a narrative, or mm-hmm. you know, they just for whatever reason got it wrong.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm not trying to say that someone ran the test wrong. I'm just saying it was new.
Although we recently did a case where someone did run the test wrong. Remember mm-hmm. who was that with the
Beatrice Six?
The Beatrice Six.
Mm-hmm. That was a big mess up.
Big
uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was more than enough.
I guess we're keeping it PG today, huh? Yeah. Well, Cooper Allen's out there somewhere. I don't want to say the word I want to say right
uh-huh,
now.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
All right.
Watch out. All right, the next suspect we want to talk about is Rick Marshall.
Mm.
Okay.
I got a thing about this guy.
Go ahead.
No, I don't have, you go, I mean, I just, he was a film buff.
Ah, look at his picture.
He was
sorry, people, our listeners can't see him, but
look it up
really,
and see if you make the same noise Kelly just made.
Is that a bad toupee? What the hell is going on with his hair?
It's either a bad toupee or a worse haircut.
Wow.
But I mean, he was a guy who was involved. He was involved in the theater industry in San Francisco and worked as a projectionist. I think, you tell me if I got this wrong. And there's a tie-in that I'll mention when I get to the movie part of this.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of dots get connected with this guy too.
Mm-hmm. Well, he certainly has the look we're looking for here. Wow, I'm being too harsh.
Okay, apparently we're going to put that on our Instagram page, Katie. I think we have
sure,
to now.
Yeah. In 1976, Marshall became a Zodiac suspect after making suspicious comments over his ham radio. So he's one of those ham radio people.
Well, that's...
I mean, that was a form of entertainment back in this
certainly.
Time. You would get on... Scott, what is a ham radio?
Well, it would be, it's a radio where you can use it. It's not just like a CB, a Citizens Band radio was late in the 70s when I could talk to you from 5 miles away, Breaker 19. With a ham radio, and my great uncle David had one of these when I was a kid, and it was this big apparatus, as big as a computer and a printer and a desk all put together now. And you could actually talk to people on the other side of the world, because AM signals bounce off of the atmosphere and go all the way around the globe, whereas an FM signal is a straight line signal. So you can't listen to an FM radio from 40 miles away. But on some clear nights, you can hear a hockey game from Wisconsin if you've got your AM radio pointed in the right direction. And that's what a ham radio was times 1,000. And so you could talk to people and actually talk to people back and forth all over the world. I remember that my Uncle David talked to people in Finland and Norway.
Well, now, if you are my age or younger, or mm-hmm. maybe somewhere in between.
You have the internet.
It is. No. And you have no idea what Scott's talking about. It's what they use in Stranger Things.
There you go. Yes, mm-hmm. that's exactly it.
Yes, yes.
Thank you. So I have not seen season two of that.
this guy's an interesting character, especially for the owner of this website that we're talking about, ZodiacKiller.com, Marshall agrees. He agrees to be interviewed by the detective, but he denies being the Zodiac Killer in the interview.
Smart.
Yeah. as you do.
He's savvy like that, the Zodiac Killer.
In 2001, Marshall emails the guy who runs this ZodiacKiller.com website. This was the first Zodiac suspect to ever contact him. He says that he's aware of. And he was upset over a very trivial detail that he read on the website. And he puts a copy of the email here. He says that the title of it, the subject is Silly Man.
This is from Marshall
mm-hmm.
to Voight.
Yep.
Okay.
So from the suspect to the guy. Okay. Subject, Silly Man, 2 exclamation points. How can you waste time and energy on this dead horse? Your information regarding me is fifth or sixth hand. For instance, I never lived in a warehouse in Marin. I leased an industrial property at 36A Front Street, in which it included a 4-room, fully equipped apartment. If I find any further scurrilous, debasing, dope-handed out from this source, be prepared to defend a personal damage suit by a first-rate attorney. Now, what I just read to you had very little periods and commas, so if I had read it as written, uh-huh. I would have run out of breath. And the grammar is like not a lot of capitalizations. He capitalized your, and he capitalized I.
But this is
and
an Marin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, so then the guy from the website, who did you say?
Tom Voight.
Tom Voight. He puts his thoughts about the email here, and then he kind of moves on with his suspect list. So it's a pretty interesting exchange okay. if you want to access this website and take a look at it. As far as the website is concerned, DNA testing was not performed to rule out or rule in Marshall. And he died in 2008. So Rick Marshall. And it also has a YouTube video here. I haven't watched it, but I'm gonna.
Are you?
It looks like he's just gonna be babbling on about something. So, you know, if you got some, pop you some popcorn and
yeah,
check that out.
Just right. Another rabbit hole.
Yep. Okay. And the final suspect that I will talk about today is Lawrence Kane. Scott, anything you want to say about Kane?
I'm trying to remember the details about Kane. It seems like he was connected to one of the girls. Like maybe he was somebody figured out that he, or maybe it was Arthur Lee Allen, that hung out at the restaurant where Darlene Farren worked in Vallejo. That would be Terry's Waffle House, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right about that?
I think that was Arthur Lee Allen.
I think maybe that was Arthur Lee Allen.
Scott, you may be right. It may be this guy because the sister of Zodiac victim, Darlene Farren, Pam Huckabee, she claims that he followed her in the months before the murder.
That's it. That's what I was thinking about.
Yes. So, and that goes, that's very consistent with Majot's statements of being followed
yes.
and someone, you know. And so this particular guy was obviously a dangerous guy because he had a very long rap sheet as a result of a massive brain damage that he got in 1962 in a car accident. He was allegedly diagnosed by a psychologist as losing the ability to control self-gratification.
I'm not Ew. Saying a word.
I'm going to say impulse control.
There you go.
One.
Let's yeah. do that.
So this is going to be someone who's very impulsive. To me, this sort of works against this guy being the Zodiac because I feel like the Zodiac very much so has the ability to delay gratification. He's a planner. Mm. He's, you know, to me, based on the injury that the man experienced in 1962, Kane, that we're talking about, if he doesn't have the ability to control self-gratification, that's going to be a problem when you're trying to strategize and plan a crime and mail stuff to the police.
And write cryptograms with hundreds of characters in them.
Exactly. Yeah. So this almost works against him, in my opinion, and that's just me, and we all know my expertise.
Nope.
He was arrested in Redwood City, California in August 1968. It was just 4 months before Zodiac's first San Francisco Bay Area murders on December 20th, 1968. That's really all it says here, so there may be some discrepancy over, was he out of jail? Was he in, you know, he was kind of in and out of jail anyway, so he may not have even been around and available to commit any of these. But he died in 2010 in Reno, Nevada. So that's kind of a, well,
yeah.
There you go. I'm not sure. And that's the way that it goes when you're talking about the suspects in the Zodiac case.
It really is.
You
get three quarters of the way down the road and you think, okay, this guy looks great. And then something jumps out and goes, wait a minute, it can't be this guy. You know, he was out of the state or he was incarcerated or, and one of the things about Arthur Lee Allen was, that he was incarcerated for 3 years from like 72 to 74. Later in this whole Zodiac investigation, nobody got any letters from anybody the entire time he was locked up. But so what?
Interesting.
If that's the only thing you've got to hang your hat on, that doesn't make him the killer.
You can't. I don't think there's a jury around that would vote to send that person to jail or to the death chamber.
Yeah.
On that evidence, right?
I certainly
there.
Hope not.
Yeah. So more and more rabbit holes, and we could go on and on about this case for months. But instead of doing that, Scott is going to talk about his favorite avenue of research for this three-part series, and that's the big screen and the impact the Zodiac Killer has had on pop culture and entertainment in general since he first struck in December of 68.
All right, so I've got a list of like four or five things, but I think I'm going to narrow it down to two, maybe three. But I mean, if you haven't seen the 2007 David Fincher film, The Zodiac, which stars Robert Downey Jr. and Jake Gyllenhaal and Mark Ruffalo and Anthony Edwards, among others, Chloe 7A. Did I say her name right? 7A?
Sure.
Sure.
Close enough. I don't know.
Close enough for me. Anyway, they're all in this movie. And there's a fantastic book that, again, Robert Graysmith wrote. And you can find it on Amazon today. And it's called Shooting Zodiac. And it's an interview with Fincher and the executive producer of the film, whose name is Brad Fisher, and the guy who wrote the screenplay, whose name is Jamie Vanderbilt. So the three of them, the book ends before the movie ever, before the first shot is ever made of the movie. It's basically the 6 or 9 or 12 months leading up to the film being greenlit by the studio, because David Fincher wants to make sure that if he does make this movie, and at this point he doesn't know, and David Fincher is the guy, if you don't know, who directed Fight Club in 1999. He did Seven in 97, starring Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt, one of the creepiest movies of all times.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing. I just came like, what's in the box?
Yeah. If you don't know what's in the box, we're not going to spoil it for you, but you should freaking know by now if you don't. Anyway, so Fincher is the same guy. So he wanted to make very certain that if he did make this movie, that he got it right. He got all of the facts right. And he was actually a kid in the Bay Area when the Zodiac was threatening school buses, because he tells a story in the book about when his dad, he said, my dad just laid it all out for you. And one day Fincher comes home from having the school bus followed by police cars. And he says, hey dad, why are the cops following us? And he said, oh yeah, there's a killer on the loose. He's threatening to shoot kids in school buses. So that's how 7-year-old David Fincher in 1969 finds out about the Zodiac Killer. Mm-hmm. So this is something that's always been a part of his personality his whole life. And here he is 30 years later with he's a very successful Hollywood director now. Mm-hmm. And he's got a good script in his hand. He knows that he wants to tell this story, and he knows first of all and foremost that he wants to get it right. So he spends months in the Bay Area. He goes to Lake Berryessa with one of the park rangers who was there the day that Brian and Cecilia were stabbed. Mm-hmm. And when they figure out where exactly the attack happened, it looks completely different. The trees are all gone. The water has washed away the scrub brush that used to be there. Now it's just sand. When Fincher eventually makes the film, He has trees pulled up out of the ground and flown in by a helicopter to recreate exactly where the trees were. They plant scrub brush in the ground one clump at a time to recreate exactly the way that that hump of dirt out in Lake Berryessa looked on September the 27th, 1969. That is how efficient he was about making sure he got the facts right.
That is thorough.
There are plenty of things in the film that are that Hollywood takes a little bit of license with. And one example that I will give you, Robert Downey Jr. plays Paul Avery, one of the investigative crime reporters for the San Francisco Chronicle, who was very key to this whole story back in the day. And Gyllenhaal plays Gray Smith, who is a young political cartoonist who becomes obsessed with the cryptograms and ends up spending his whole life focusing on the Zodiac to the detriment of his marriage and his children and a lot of other things. But he focuses on this. In the movie, the two of them have a lot of interaction together. They speak a lot to each other because, I mean, let's think about it. Robert Downey Jr. plays basically the same character in every film that he plays. He's the smartass. Yeah. He's the witty smartass in every film. I mean, think about Iron Man. Think about Back to School in 1987 with Rodney Dangerfield. He's the same guy back then as a teenager that he is in Zodiac in 07 and all the Iron Man films. So they made that up. They wanted the two of them to interact with each other, to let Gray Smith be the dope who doesn't know what he's up to. And old Wiley Paul Avery, played by Robert Downey Jr., kind of steers him in the right direction. So that was one thing that they got wrong. But they got a lot of other things right. And you know, Fincher would tell you that he did that on purpose because I've got to move the story along.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But as far as the attacks themselves, the attacks that they recreate in the film, Fincher wanted to be as accurate as possible about the way that it looked and the time of night that it was and how much moon was in the sky and exactly where the car was parked. And this is the last example I will give you about how accurate he wanted to be. He insisted on speaking to the first patrol officer who arrived at the Paul Stein murder scene on October the 11th, 1969, because he wanted to know if the passenger side front door on cab number 912 was open or closed when he got there. Because the famous shot that you see from the crime scene is that Stein's body is kind of almost hanging out that open passenger side door.
Yes.
Well, he got confirmation from the first officer on the scene, and I forget his name. He said, when I got there, that door was closed. And there is a scene in Zodiac. It's being shot from where the teenagers who saw the crime take place would have seen it from that same angle. And it's very particular about the Zodiac gets out of the right side passenger seat, gets into the right side front seat, does whatever it is that he does. We know now that he was taking off a piece of Paul Stein's shirt so he could mail it to the Chronicle later, and shuts the door behind him. He wanted to get that right. Wow. And that's what Fincher did, and that's how he made the movie the way he did. And here's the last thing about Zodiac before I move along to the next movie on the list. There is a sequence in the film where a woman is kidnapped on the side of the road, and she claims later that she was kidnapped by the Zodiac. She ends up escaping. He pulls up to a stop sign, and she and her young baby run out of the car and get away. The woman who played that role in the movie's name was Ione Skye. I-O-N-E is her first name. S-K-Y-E is her second name. I hope I got the pronunciation right. She is the daughter of the man who sang Hurdy Gurdy Man.
Oh, oh my goodness.
She is the daughter of Donovan Leitch.
And that's a very creepy scene.
Yes.
And it's a very creepy song.
It's a very creepy song. But just one of the other things that he wanted to do, just it wasn't really a way to get a detail right, but hey, why not make this as inclusive as we can? I mean, he tried to involve the SFPD. He talked to Toski and Armstrong, the two San Francisco Police Department detectives who investigated the Stein crime, and began to realize, hey, this is all connected. And if they didn't already know, 2 days later when a piece of Paul Stein's shirt got to the Chronicle, they all knew it then. All right, that's enough about the Zodiac. So the 1971 Clint Eastwood movie Dirty Harry takes a page from the Zodiac, and in the movie it's called the bad guy is called the Scorpio, but a lot of similarities there. There's a school bus angle. There's a point in at the end of Dirty Harry where the Scorpio kidnaps a busload of school children. And this is while this is all not resolved yet. And it, and technically it's still not resolved today, but it certainly wasn't then. Moving along. So the movie that's out right now that Katie's going to throw something at me for bringing up yet again, the new Batman movie, The Batman, director Matt Reeves said that, and I read this a month ago, he said that his take on the Riddler, who is played expertly by Paul Dano, by the way, in the film, was borrowed directly from the Zodiac. There is a sequence in the film where Dano's character calls in on a phone and says, "This is the Riddler speaking." And there is a post-credit scene in Batman.
Okay, don't give away too much now. People,
I'm not going to give away anything.
Okay.
Because there is no post-credit scene except for it's a close-up of an old DOS-based monitor with green text and nothing else.
Okay.
And the last word on the screen is, you want Henry to read it, or you want me to read it?
Ooh, let's let Henry read it one more time.
It's goodbye. And Henry, take it away.
Goodbye.
And one last thing that I will bring up, and to get back to Rick Marshall for a second, and there a lot of the folks who think that Rick Marshall is a viable Zodiac suspect is because he was involved in the film industry. He was in theater. He ran a projectionist. He ran a projector at a silent movie theater back in the day. And there was a film that came out in 1939 called Charlie Chan at Treasure Island. And Treasure Island is this artificial island that was built in San Francisco Bay for a World's Fair that took place in 39 and 40. So they made the movie about the same time. In the movie, and if you know who Charlie Chan is, good for you. And if you don't, then you should look it up. It's a little bit racist these days, probably. But it was a really good series of films about a Chinese detective. Mm-hmm. Who came to America and outsmarted everybody. And sure enough, that's what happened in Charlie Chan at Treasure Island. But the bad guy in that film was Dr. Zodiac.
Ooh.
And he wrote letters to the local newspapers and blackmailed people. And that's how they caught him.
Mm-hmm.
He had this weird language that he used. And I don't remember if there were cryptograms or not. But anyway, to use the same term again for the fourth time tonight, creepy AF.
Well, and it goes back to the FBI profile where they're saying, you know, he's taking this from different things. He's not inventive. Everything he does.
When you said that,
he's taking.
I was like, that makes sense now because I hadn't read that profile. But if you think Rick Marshall's a good suspect, there's another brick in the wall because he would just take something that he had seen in a movie.
Yeah,
and you know, kind of like the whole Arthur Lee Allen thing with his watch.
Mm-hmm.
There's another. You know, borrowing someone else's good idea and making it my own.
And I love the fact that he has emailed, you know, the guy with the website. He's a stickler for his details, which is another thing that Zodiac was a very, you know, big stickler.
And there's a sequence near the end. Yeah. And there's a sequence near the end of the film Zodiac where they kind of address this suspect. They don't get way down in the weeds on it, but there's a thing at the end. And Charles Fleischer is the guy who plays this friend of Rick Marshall's that Jake Gyllenhaal's character goes to see. Mm-hmm. And one little movie tidbit that I can't resist telling you, Charles Fleischer, he's a little short redheaded dude with curly hair, the voice of Roger Rabbit. Has nothing to do with anything, but as soon as I saw him, I thought, holy shit, that's Roger Rabbit.
Roger Rabbit.
Anyway, so there, if you wanted to hear the service getting scratched on the Zodiac Killer, consider your itch addressed. We have tackled this topic somewhat thoroughly at this point, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think so too, please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to our podcast. And if you don't, keep your damned one-star review to yourself. And I've sworn three times, and I apologize to Joy Allen. I'm out of here.
I'm going to give a little bit of a teaser for next week.
Okay, yes, please.
So we rounded out our Zodiac, and you know that's the way that California does the Zodiac.
Uh-oh.
But did you know that Alabama does the Zodiac as well? There is a killer that some podcasts have called the Alabama Zodiac. And we're going to talk about that person.
Next week?
Next week.
On this podcast?
On this podcast. And I'll tell you what Alabama does differently.
Go on.
Alabama says, I'll see your Zodiac. Hold my beer.
Yes.
Wow. Drink up.
Exactly.
All right. Okay.
Exactly.
So I guess we'll do this all again next week or maybe in 10 minutes.
Do you have any shout outs?
I don't think I have any. Oh, wait, I do have one.
Yeah,
Cade Gossett gets an updated shout out because he reached out to me last week about the Murdoch case. Am I saying that right?
You are.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants us to talk about that. And I told him we certainly will, that you have it on the list for us to do sometime this summer. And he's very excited to hear what we do because he listens to us every day on the way to class in Charleston, South Carolina at law school.
Thank you. Thank you, Kane. I appreciate that. And thank you for that suggestion. And you too can give us a suggestion at truecrimeoneasystreet@gmail.com.
Good night, everybody.